You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. My voice still sounds like crap. I apologize for that. I'm trying to fight through this.
It sounds a little better today.
I feel a little better. Yeah. We're getting closer to that post-sickness, sexy, deep voice kind of stage.
No.
Yesterday was just post-sick voice. Now I sound kind of sexy.
No, you do not.
I still do not sound sexy.
No, not at all.
I will not try this on Jen when she gets home. We are going to answer your questions today. It is a Friday mailbag day. It's the rare dual mailbag where Harrison and I will both give our thoughts on your questions. We went to iTunes. You guys did a great job. You guys actually asked some really good questions. There's some really good ones in there. So we're going to touch on that. Not all of them in there are questions. Some of them are along the lines
hatred of Anthony and praise for me, which I appreciate,
and outright hatred of Matt Moore, which
was hilarious. And yeah, thank you for leaving the 5 stars anyway. We appreciate that.
It was a rare occasion where I wasn't the one getting hated on, so I'll take it. I will take it.
It probably had the opposite effect, and Anthony's just going to bring Matt Moore on more.
Yeah, it really will, because it means that I'm not the one getting the hatred.
Yeah, you get to be the good cop.
Yeah. So today, though, some of the questions that were asked involve Paul George, DeMarcus Cousins, Luke and Julius Randle, Magic and Palinka, an overview of the Lakers and their some potential chemistry stuff, an overview of the Lakers and expectations and why this Lakers season feels more disappointing than it maybe should. So we're just going to get into those questions. And see where they take us. And Harrison and I, one thing we don't do is answer these questions to each other before we record. It gives for more of a natural back and forth feel. So we'll see. Harrison and I disagreeing leads usually to a better show. And I'm sure, given the topics at hand, that we will disagree at some point. So
yeah, I mean, also because your opinions are usually trash. So
I see. Why do you insist on being so loudly wrong? I guess 2017, 2018. That's the thing. So, as always, make sure you're following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, where Harrison writes, and Lakers Outsiders, where I write. Harrison is at HMFagan on Twitter. I am at Anthony Irwin LA on Twitter. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Lakers. Anytime we send out a link, it's either getting retweeted by Locked On Lakers or it's getting sent out by Locked On Lakers. So that's the best way to find our show on Twitter. And then we also have Locked On Lakers on Facebook, which you should definitely be following. That's where we'll go live every so often when we have to, and we answer questions live for you guys on Facebook/Locked On Lakers. All right, so let's go ahead and get to this first question here, Harrison. What do you have lined up for us?
So this one is from Vet57, and it says, "Hey guys, has there been any indication in the past that Cousins would want to be in LA? If he were to be a Laker, are you confident that he will respect Luke and fit into the new culture that Magic, Rob, and Luke are trying to instill?" And so I thought that this question was particularly topical, given that Mark Stein reported earlier this week on the Dunked On podcast, I believe, if I remember correctly, that the Lakers were expected by most teams around the league, and he even said whatever that means, but most other teams around the league expect the Lakers to target DeMarcus Cousins, but not as their first priority. And so I just thought that this question kind of leads us to, like, you know, I don't know that there's ever been an indication that Cousins wants to be in LA. And then I also think that it's just interesting that the Lakers, you know, obviously everyone has priorities in life. Like, my priority would be get would be to get paid $1 million to do this podcast per show and not have to work any other jobs. But that, you know, that is obviously not where I'm at. And like the Lakers are, they've been desperate. They haven't been able to sign any free agents. And it's just like, it's kind of weird to think about them being saying no to DeMarcus Cousins. But I guess the only scenario where they would probably do that is if they got like Paul George and LeBron. But in the unlikely event that that happens, Anthony, what are your thoughts on Cousins to LA? I have kind of mixed thoughts on this.
So one thing that I wish we would pick up in analysis about basketball players is their impact on the court, not their talent level. And we value guys, I think, based on talent level a little bit too much and not on the impact that they have. Look, DeMarcus Cousins is one of the most talented players that has ever played in the National Basketball Association. He is
unquestionably.
He is 7 foot tall. He's huge. He can shoot from 3-point range. He moves his feet well. He does everything that you would want a big in the modern NBA to be able to do, right? And yet, for some reason, his teams haven't made the playoffs. You get way too much temper tantrums on the court. You get too many questions about what kind of coaching fit actually works with him and how long said coach would actually work with him, if there is a such thing as a long-term solution at coach for a DeMarcus Cousins type temperament. So I think, yes, beggars can't be choosers. And if the Lakers walk away with DeMarcus Cousins, then you kind of have to bring that type of talent in, given the lack thereof that we've seen from the Lakers for forever now. But if that was the only guy that they walk away from this upcoming offseason with, it would be tough for me to look at the Magic and Pelinka combination after their first full year and first full offseason together as a success.
Yeah, I mean, any time that you can bring in a talent like that, you kind of have to. Now, I do think that Vet 57 does bring up some like interesting like kind of points, though, in that like DeMarcus Cousins, everyone says, like every reporter kind of says, and like what they've heard from front offices is like you have to have a strong culture instilled to be able to kind of bring in a DeMarcus Cousins and not have him kind of overrun everything, because he's been like shown to be like an at times moody player and at times a difficult to deal with player. And you know, I think that that's a risk with a young coach and with a young team. And I don't know, like, would you be worried at all about that? I think that obviously if the Lakers are have the chance to bring him in, they kind of have to. But if they did, would you be worried about anything like that?
I'm going to answer that here in a second. Yes. Yes.
Oh, solid tease.
Long story short, yes, I would absolutely be terrified, because we've already seen there were questions about LaVar Ball before the draft, right? Like there were questions about the Lakers' ability to handle LaVar Ball before the draft. And all we've seen this year is that they were not necessarily ready for it. They tried to ring him in privately. They haven't said anything publicly. The most they've said publicly has come via random Instagram posts and hashtag in Luke we trust from Jeannie Buss. So no, I don't think what will be a second year front office, what will be a third year head coach, what will be a second year owner and CEO will be in the right place to handle a DeMarcus Cousins. And frankly, I think that can be the same can be said, I think, about LeBron, can't it? Because you look at a lot of the problems that you have out there in Cleveland, and they have a lot to do with the fact that they overpaid LeBron's guys, right? Tristan Thompson's deal is atrocious. J.R. Smith's deal is atrocious. Their entire cap situation, yes, they're probably going to enter this upcoming Eastern Conference playoffs as the favorite because they still have LeBron, but they had defensive issues, and their answer to them was bringing in Isaiah Thomas, arguably the worst defensive player in the entire league.
Hey, don't say that around the host of Locked On Celtics.
That's a good point. Don't want to get punched. But I think with all of these superstar guys, now that's kind of the draw for me to Paul George, is that he is a little bit quieter and there is interest in being a Laker, not just for the basketball reasons aspect of it, that he would be happy to be a Laker because he would be a Laker. And I don't know if that would be the case with DeMarcus Cousins, if that would be the case with LeBron, and if Magic Johnson was kind of pushed or backed into a corner by a super talented NBA superstar, I don't know that he's necessarily equipped right now to deal with that, right?
The other thing is that Cousins is like a difficult personality, like we've talked about that, and at times moody, and maybe not the best always locker room guy, and you're bringing him into a very young team. Like, it's not even just that the front office and coach are relatively inexperienced, it's that all of a sudden this is the most established, veteran, talented player that any of these young guys have ever played with, and they're going to instantly look up to him and instantly be trying to learn things from him. And if, you know, maybe DeMarcus Cousins has matured. Like, there hasn't been a whole lot of noise out of New Orleans about him having any problems, so maybe a big part of it was just the Kings. But that would be something that I think that the Lakers would have to be wary about, while they should definitely still bring him in.
And that's also before everything that we've said already is before we mention the dynamic that changes once you pay a max guy, because it would take a lot of money. And you're talking about a difficult personality, at times called immature. Now, again, like you said, it might just be the Kings, because the Kings aren't a good organization, right? The Lakers are a better organization, I would say, than the Sacramento Kings. I am a better podcast host than my dog, right? Arguably. But with,
I don't know, when I'm just gonna say Callie's never skipped three shows in a row, so
that's true. That's I can't even, all right, that's why I said arguably.
Yeah.
But the Lakers, though, would be, again, all that we talked about: temperament, on court, off court stuff, young front office, young coach, young owner. And then on top of that, the person who is making by far the most amount of money over a stretch of 3 or 4 years, that person's going to be DeMarcus Cousins, and I don't know if that's a winning situation. And you're looking at guys like Lonzo, and can you imagine the first time LeVar Ball pipes up about DeMarcus Cousins on court?
Hey, they got along. There was that video that went viral of the two of them embracing. LeVar Ball actually may be a draw for DeMarcus Cousins in Los Angeles. You know, like, we've heard all these reports about he's scaring free agents away. He might be the perfect LeVar Ball player. They might end up being best friends.
Can you imagine, though, the first time LeVar Ball says anything about DeMarcus Cousins, anything at all?
Well, that actually would solve a couple problems for the Lakers, because it would be the last time LeVar Ball was ever heard from. So, you know.
And DeMarcus Cousins might be jailed for the disappearance of the aforementioned LeVar Ball. I think, to answer the actual question, right, yes, you bring in DeMarcus Cousins. I don't know, they talk about it like he's not the Lakers' top priority. I feel like the DeMarcus Cousins market is going to be resolved rather quickly. But if the Lakers have an opportunity to sign him, then you have to take that opportunity and see how things work from there. I just think they'd really take a look in the mirror before you go down that path. And you figure out a lot of the issues that they've had with LeVar Ball, and maybe this year has worked as like a training ground for that. But you'd better ask some tough questions about yourself and the entire organization before you make that guy, DeMarcus Cousins, the face of the franchise.
Yeah, and so I think, real quick, just to make sure that we answer the actual question, yes or no. We can both give a yes or no. If Cousins was a Laker, are we confident that he'll respect or fit into the culture that Magic, Luke, and Rob are trying to instill? Mine is no, and I don't mean that in necessarily a bad way. I just think that when DeMarcus Cousins comes in, it changes the culture. It's just different.
Yeah, I would say no as well, but only because it has to be a yes or no question, right?
Yeah. Okay, so let's get to the next one. This one is from ThenL33, and it's about 2018 free agency as well. And so they're basically saying that people thought that kind of like the consensus was that the Lakers were like going to sign LeBron and Paul George in 2018 before the season. I don't know that that was such a consensus, but I know there were a lot of rumors about it, and there was a lot of talk when there was nothing else to talk about. But where do we see that now at midseason? And did the Lakers, by telegraphing their plan, actually ruin chemistry, which leads to lower wins and less interest by free agents? I'm going to go ahead and answer this first because you've talked a long time and I want to give your voice time to recover. So I in my
let's
mind...
Let's actually let you give my voice some time to recover here in a second.
Okay, so I think... Before the, I don't know that it was a consensus, like I said, before the season that this was going to happen. And I don't really know that we should read anything into the winning percentage like of OKC and Indiana being about the same. I don't even know. I'd have to look at the stats if that's like actually true. Anthony, can you look that up really quick while I answer this? But I
wait,
also
what am I
think,
looking up?
Yeah. So
wait,
by,
what am I looking up?
Oh, whether or not OKC and Indiana have the same winning percentage right now. Oh, I don't know that that's literally true. But that was part of the question, and whether or not we should read anything into that. Regardless, I don't know that we necessarily need to read into that. I think that OKC is better than their record, and I think that Indiana is playing a little bit above kind of their like punching weight because they're playing in the East, which is garbage. And
the Indiana Pacers are 24-20. The Oklahoma City Thunder are 25-20.
Wow. Okay. Good for Indiana. I mean, But still, I think like they're punching a little bit above like their weight class in that they're playing in the garbage East and the Thunder have to play in the West, and they had like significant adjustments to make with all of those ball dominant players coming together, and that their defense is really, really good. And that's the most important thing for them, I would say. But did the Lakers actually ruin team chemistry by kind of telegraphing this interest? I think in some ways, yeah. I think for sure they hurt team chemistry. We have reports about that. Like they had that meeting that there was too much talk about next season and guys' business interests and like who was going to be there and who wasn't going to be there, and that was like kind of widely reported. And they were in the midst of a lull then, and Lonzo came back and they won four games straight, and then he's went out again, and now they've lost two as of when we're recording this, and they'll try and change that against those very same Pacers tonight. But I think they inarguably almost like hurt team chemistry. I don't know. Am I going too hard on them? I don't feel like that's very arguable. I think they definitely hurt team chemistry.
Yeah, the chemistry this year, I think it never crossed the path of being irredeemable. You know, it never crossed the path or the there was never a moment, or we haven't reached that moment where the Lakers' chemistry is beyond repair. But it's inarguable, right? You don't have a team meeting when everything is going well. those team meetings, you don't have those team meetings to pat everybody on the back and say, wow, look how happy everybody is, right? And there's a possibility also with that team meeting that things got a little too real. The Lakers have some personalities. Like, I don't think Julius Randle is the kind of guy to beat around the bush. If he has something to say in that kind of team meeting setting, he's going to say it. And Larry Nance Jr. to me seems like the kind of guy who would also just come out and say that kind of thing. Those guys happen to play the same position, man. So if neither of those guys are beating around the bush, and maybe both those guys feel like they have the skills and the talent to make the team better, and both of them maybe hypothetically said that they should be playing more, then of course they rubbed each other the wrong way. And there are other situations like that across the entire roster. And that's before we take into account the fact that Luke Walton may or may not be working with walking orders coming from the top on down, right? If Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka are telling Luke, hey man, you have to work with this already difficult roster, you have to make that work. You have to make an already difficult situation with young players and vets who are trying to stay in the league and trying to work for their next contract. You have to make that work. But on top of that, on top of those constructs, you have to abide by some interesting rules with KCP because of his agent. You have to make sure
I feel like it's important. Again, this is all speculation. We don't know that any of this is all just us guessing based on outcomes.
Right. But if these things are taking place, then as Luke Walton is getting feedback from his players, he has to take that into account without maybe mentioning the stuff that it might be coming from Magic and those guys, right? So he's stuck between a rock and a hard place. His entire roster may not be necessarily all that thrilled about it. I wouldn't be thrilled to have to play with Tyler freaking Ennis, right? Every time Lonzo Ball gets hurt. So there's all these things that are taking place, and the team happens to be losing more often than they're winning, and that fix is not really an option so long as Tyler Ennis is the starting point guard because Lonzo is hurt. And yeah, I mean the team is not in the same place as it was at the beginning of the year, or maybe even 20 games into the season when everybody was healthy. And everything that we talked about, that's before you mentioned the frustration that comes from the wear and tear of an NBA season. None of these guys are 100%, and they have to be pretty tired from playing games every other day or every other night, and practices every so often as well. Some of these guys' seasons haven't gone the way that they would have liked. And so, personally, and in a team construct. So, no, it'd be weird if the team had great chemistry right now. I'd be a little concerned if the team had great chemistry right now.
Well, I don't know about concerned. I think that would be, honestly, I'd be less, like, I think Luke Walton would be the greatest coach of all time if the team had perfect chemistry right now. But yeah, there are just so many things that went into this year that just were always going to make it difficult for this to be a team that stayed together. And they kind of have. They've went through these rough patches, but it's like you said, the locker room hasn't been torn apart yet. They still seem to be functional. And so, I mean, that's kind of like an achievement in and of itself that they haven't completely splintered. But to get back to the original question, I think definitely the free agency stuff ended up hurting kind of the team chemistry this year. And so speaking of that, I think we should take another free agency question. And this one is from Dereal Nate B. And it says, hey, likely just Anthony. So first of all, thanks for that. I am reading your question and I am going to answer it. But love the podcast and listening to it every day of the week. My question is very simple. Do you think there is a chance Paul George would take a pay cut to come play for the Lakers if it clears cap space for LeBron or DeMarcus Cousins? And I'll go ahead and again answer this one first to give you a little bit of a rest. But I mean, do I think there's a chance? I think maybe there's a chance. I don't know that it's a good chance. I think it's going to depend on how desperate Paul George is to be in LA, for one. And it's going to depend on whether or not that desperation makes him, whether or not that desperation is related to winning. And so if the Lakers are kind of on the borderline of being able to sign two max guys, and Paul George is A, desperate to play in LA, and B, desperate to play on a good team in LA, then I could see him being the guy that's kind of like the Dwayne Wade was in Miami, where he takes a pay cut just because the situation and the winning are exactly what he cares about. But if Paul George just wants to be in Los Angeles and just wants to own the Lakers franchise and be the new Kobe and be their new franchise player, then it would almost be fitting if, as a, you know, card carrying Kobe stan, that he did not take a pay cut and was not willing to take less than his full value. And, you know, to be honest, I couldn't blame him for that. I think that everybody has a right to be paid what they're truly worth. And max contracts still don't offer that to superstars like Paul George, what they would actually be paid on a free market. And so if he didn't want to take a pay cut, I don't think that you can begrudge him for that. But I do think that there is a scenario where he says, hey, I really want to be in LA. I really want to win. I am willing to take less money to make sure that one of these guys comes with me. But again, this is all like kind of pie in the sky stuff. Like the Lakers signing two max free agents, I don't think is by any means a guarantee. Anthony, what do you think about this, all this stuff?
I think everything's a possibility, right? But I think you have to plan for the scenario where you have to pay all of these guys their full worth. So yes, Paul George could in theory take a pay cut, but I think the Lakers have to plan and carve out as much cap space as they possibly can in order to sign two max guys at full max slots, right?
Yep.
The other thing, too, is that I don't think Paul George would necessarily take a pay cut, but let's say the Lakers trade for him, and I think this scenario has kind of gone out the door because of the way OKC has kind of figured things out to a certain extent. But let's just say in this scenario that the Lakers do trade for Paul George and he is a Laker heading into the offseason. Maybe he doesn't take a pay cut, meaning he opts out and then takes less than he would like to long term. But maybe he opts into his current deal and that frees up an extra, I think it's like $4 or $5 million. So maybe that's the scenario that maybe works out. But like I said, okay, OKC has played way too well at this point. They're probably going to want to ride this out and see what they can do in the playoffs and then see what chance they have at convincing him to stick around. I don't think that's how I would do it if it were me, because I don't think they have a very good chance at doing much in the playoffs. And then by extension, I don't think that'll be enough to convince Paul George to stick around long term. But hey, do you, OKC?
Yeah, I think at this point it would take a catastrophic injury to like Westbrook and or Carmelo for OKC to even consider trading Paul George.
Actually, a catastrophic injury to Melo would probably help the thing. But the other thing too here to keep in mind is that Paul George and LeBron don't, per several people that I've spoken to, they don't really run in the same circles. Right, LeBron is a little bit older than Paul George. The circle that LeBron would run in would more closely resemble the circle that, say, Russell Westbrook would run in. And so what you have going on is like you have two people that don't necessarily talk all that much. And this idea that they're planning out a scenario where those guys can play for the Lakers while also kind of sort of playing the same position and plan all this
neither
out.
Neither of them want to play power forward.
Yeah,
but Anthony, but wait, they hugged on the court in the playoffs that one time.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah, so I think what LeBron whispered in Paul George's ear was like, hey, team up with me on the Lakers in 7 years.
And maybe one of us will figure out a way to play the four and be happy about it.
Yeah, tank Oklahoma City on your way out.
Yeah. So yeah, I think what will probably turn out here is the Lakers will and look, this has been the case all year before the year started anyway, is that the Lakers need to start winning games, and the better that their situation looks, the more likely Paul George is going to be to take whatever pay cut he might have to make it work for other superstars. But if the Lakers don't get some momentum going into the end of the season here, you're going to ask a superstar to leave a winning situation, take less money than he would necessarily be worth, and do so to maybe convince other superstars who are also in winning situations to come. I'm sorry, man. That's not how the reality of the NBA works. You need to be a winning situation on your own, and then that'll go a long ways in convincing superstars to say, okay, yeah, I see where they're going.
Yeah, and so since the Lakers' plan is very much to sign two superstars, I think this perfectly leads us into our next question from D3DS, and he or she asks, are you confident that Magic and Pelinka are the right people to turn this team around, or do they need to hire somebody else if they fail? I think I'll answer the second part of that first. If they fail, then yes, the Lakers probably need to – if Magic and Pelinka fail to turn the team around, then yes, the Lakers probably need to go a different direction. But I'm kind of mixed on whether or not I'm confident that they're the right people to turn this team around. I think on one hand, as I've said a couple times this year, I don't think that you can really lambast them for any one decision they've made yet. I think that there have been reasons that give you confidence, and then I think there have been things that don't give confidence, and then I think that there's a lot up in the air, just because we, in our sports culture, and Anthony, you were talking about this a little bit on Twitter today in regards to rookies, but I think the same thing can kind of be said for front offices. You don't really see the results until a couple years down the line, and you have to kind of you can't just grade one move. You have to kind of grade all of the moves in tandem and see how the plan started to work out, which is why I think all executives should get like a couple years to figure out, like, are they sowing the seeds of success or are they just like, are they following a plan, but it's just not a good plan, and it's not working out? And so I think that all of that stuff takes time to evaluate. And so I think it's a little bit complicated right now.
I think we've reached a point where these decisions are made way too quickly as a whole. Yes, Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson stepped into their roles and said that they would immediately have an impact on the Lakers culture. They would immediately turn around the franchise, that this upcoming offseason that they were going to sign LeBron and this and that and the other. I would be a little concerned if they were fired because they didn't sign LeBron. I would like to see, because at that point, what do you...
Well, and they wouldn't be. I mean, Magic is Jeannie's best friend, and Pelinka has the Kobe connect. So I don't think that they would be fired just for signing LeBron. Well, also, right, would be totally unreasonable.
Right. So, even without that, right? Like, let's just say Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka were hired as two separate people that didn't have connections, that weren't Magic Johnson, that aren't Rob Pelinka, right?
So Jagic Monson and like Bob Pelinka.
Yeah, Bob Pelinka.
Yeah.
But if those two guys, if the front office was given a single year to turn around the Lakers and then they were fired because they didn't, I'd be a little concerned about the direction of the organization, because that's almost the definition of rudderless thinking, right?
No, exactly. At that point, they should have just hired LeBron and Paul George to be the president of basketball operations, right, and GM, because those are the only guys that can turn this around.
Exactly. So
in 1 year.
So to answer the actual question about my confidence in this front office, I am not confident. I will not beat around the bush. I do not think that these guys are the guys to turn around the Lakers. I don't like the way that they were hired. I don't think the Lakers did enough work to look around and see what other options were on the table. I think the Lakers continue to make mistakes that with insulated thinking that are going to keep on leading to the same mistakes over and over and over again. But with all that said, this next offseason, while it will say a lot about these guys' abilities and whether they were just selling snake oil when they were hired and before they were hired, this upcoming offseason, I would be perfectly fine if the Lakers didn't. I'd be pissed, but if the outcome
what?
Of this upcoming offseason.
You? Pissed? Yeah, what?
I would be pretty tweaked if the Lakers. You know, if I was told that LeBron was coming and Paul George was coming and we traded away D'Angelo Russell at the mere ability as an attempt to sign
LeBron.
I'll
start fining you for bringing up D'Angelo Russell.
Well, but
I'm kidding.
This is the rare occasion where I can kind of take that. I can kind of mention it, right?
Okay.
But if the outcome of all this was you have to continue to get further invested in Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram and Kyle Kuzma and Julius Randle and then whatever role players that they find to play around those guys, then there are worse scenarios, right? Like, the Lakers were in a way worse place the season after Julius Randle broke his leg, and they had fewer assets to work with and fewer long-term pieces that the fan base could get to, could be invested in. So, yeah, I think I am legitimately concerned about Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka. They got fined for tampering. They are insanely leaky,
which really should have been the one thing that Rob Pelinka knew how to do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there have been enough whispers that he kind of got backstabbed on that one by certain parties that, you know, I don't know that he's totally to blame for that.
Okay. And then, but you know, they're leakier than I would like them to be. One thing that I kind of took a little pride in was how little was known about what the Lakers were up to behind the scenes. And nowadays it's like Woj gets personal texts every time Rob is on the trade machine.
Hey, we don't know that just because Woj was sourced in Kobe's camp, we don't know that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And every time Jeannie has like a personal thought.
Just important legal disclaimer to save us from getting sued.
Yeah. And every time Jeannie has like a thought that Ramona Shelburne somehow immediately tweets out what that might be, like just as a odd coincidence. Like I miss those days when the Lakers weren't as leaky as they are now. But long story short, big picture, looking forward, this is where we are now. We have to hope that Magic Johnson is the guy. We have to hope that Rob Pelinka is the guy, because Magic isn't getting fired. Rob Pelinka might, if things go really badly, Rob Pelinka might, and maybe a different thinker is brought in. Maybe that's the best case scenario if they strike out this upcoming offseason. But this is where we are. We have to hope that these guys are the ones who can turn it around.
I think my confidence level in them is higher than yours, just because of the way that it sounds like perception around the league has changed of the Lakers since they were hired. Because I do think that, like, around the league, these guys do have respect. I think that Magic Johnson does have, on some level, the ear of these players. And so I think that there are positives, but, I mean, no, I don't think it's a guarantee that these are the guys that lead them back. I think that there are very real concerns, which you outlined. I think I'm a little bit more optimistic than you are about it. And that actually kind of leads us into our next question, like the downsides or the things that people have been on them for or potentially on them for. Well, yeah, so this one comes to us from Parsa R, and it says, is this a matter of the front office telling Luke not to play Randle, or Luke having a personal problem with Randle? Is there a possibility that he is just not good at making rotations? And so I think there is a very real possibility that Luke Walton is not good at making rotations. So, like, he says kind of the right basketball things a lot of the time, but I mean, he plays all bench lineups a little bit more than I think I'd like, especially given the talent level of the Lakers bench this year. He has done a better job lately when Lonzo is in of staggering the minutes so that Lonzo is with those bench units and at least they have a creator there. But I mean, overall, I haven't been overly enamored with his rotations. I don't think that it's an unfixable thing, but I think that he's definitely had growing pains there. And again, that's not me saying that I could do a better job. I'm just saying I think that there are maybe reasons for concern there. But I think that the Randle thing is just more of, I don't know that it's the front office coming to Luke and saying, this guy might be on the way out, don't play him. But I think it's, I mean, there's a certain amount of common sense there that Randle's contract is ending. The Lakers have Nance, who's going to be around. They have Kuzma, who's going to be around. And I think that there is, on some level, even if the front office isn't saying this to Luke, that he kind of gets it. You know, like, does that make sense?
Yeah, I think the rotations thing, I've reached the point where I flat out disagree with his hockey sub technique. I'm pretty much over that.
I don't think it works unless you have a very special, like, chemistry-laden group like the Lakers bench last year.
And the idea that certain groups work on certain sets in practice, to me, that's just weird. That your entire team doesn't know the entire playbook is just odd to me.
You're basically coaching for a 2K simulation where injuries are turned off right at that point.
And exactly, because what happens is those guys wind up getting mixed together and you have no sets that they can run, right? And that's what it oftentimes looks like nowadays. And
it's like the Lakers, when they put in the Mitten last night and he was going ahead, and or a couple nights ago, and he was playing, they just went straight pick and roll. And honestly, that looked better than whatever they were trying to run with just Ennis in there. Like, if you're going to coach that way, you almost just have to scrap everything when you have injuries. And I just don't know that that's a sustainable thing.
And so, yeah, that I think to me is legitimate criticism for those who lobbed that against him. The other thing, too, that I am a little concerned about is his ability to recognize what's going on the court while it's happening. Some of his quotes after games to me are just kind of odd, where he says certain guys are you know, the best player on the court, or the might be the best player on the team, or most impactful player on the team, this and that. Some of the guys that he mentions along those lines, I would tend to I find myself disagreeing with. And the other thing, too, that I think isn't mentioned in the question, but the coaching staff that he assembled, to me, leaves a lot to be desired. And that's a big part of being a head coach, is putting together a coaching staff that not only understands roles and has roles and works collectively towards an end goal, but on you need to be challenged every so often. When Luke was doing those weird things with Randall with his rotation, I found myself saying, like, where's the assistant coach? Where's Brian Shaw? Where's Jesse Mermes to step up and say, dude, what are you looking at? Where's the analytics guy who has
I think behind the scene, I would imagine those guys probably have the read the writing on the wall as far as these are new bosses who didn't hire us. And like, these are the guys that they want to play. And this is a guy that is probably on the way out. And I think it's honestly that my theory is that it's as simple as that. And that Randall doesn't play hard all the time.
That's bullshit. But I think to me, what it gets back to for me is, where's the communication? If now look, you and I aren't there on a day-to-day basis, so we don't know what level of communication is actually taking place. But when Randall says some of the stuff that he was saying after games and was visibly frustrated both after games and during games, right? When he would get taken out and he would just kind of laugh as he was walking off the court, that looked to me like somebody who wasn't on the same page with his coach in the understanding of what he was supposed to be doing out there to stay out there, right? And if that's still the job of the head coach, no matter what might be going on with the front office, Luke at some point has to set Randall aside and say, all right, this is what's going on. This is my bosses are telling me that you might not be a part of this organization moving forward. And look, bust your ass off and see what you can do on the court, and it will lead to the best situation for you moving forward after you leave here, or you might go a long enough way in convincing Magic and Rob that you are worthy of keeping around long term. And that conversation, based on some of the quotes that I heard about that I heard coming out after games, and then some of the stuff that I saw on the court, it didn't seem like that necessarily happened. Now, maybe they did. Like I said, we aren't there. I'm not there. And maybe they did. And maybe Randall still handled that after having those conversations in a suboptimal manner. But as of right now, those are legitimate questions that fans and people can have about Luke and about Magic and about Rob Pelinka, is that these guys need to get on the same page, both about the way they build this roster moving forward and about how they make this current roster work.
Yeah, I think regardless of how you think either side has handled it, I think that there's been miscommunications on both sides. I think there's been a lack of communication on both sides, and it hasn't been the type of seamless kind of chemistry that you'd want, regardless of like who you think is in the wrong. I think that like both sides like probably could have communicated better and just handled this whole situation a little bit better.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah, and so we have two more questions that we're going to go to. This one's from Nick Batchelor, and it's best international fit player for the Lakers. I appreciate the question. Anthony didn't even want me to read this one, but I'm going to read it because the reason he didn't want me to read it is because there's probably no one less qualified to answer this than Anthony and I. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go ahead and go with Sasha Vujacic. Anthony, your thoughts.
What was the question?
Who's the best fit international player for the Lakers?
Oh my God. Luka Doncic. Why not?
Yeah, okay. So with the pick the Lakers don't have, they'll go ahead and take him. And then so this last one, last real question actually, is why are the Lakers so frustrating this year? And, you know, this is from Sad Lakers Fan. They say, you know, they talked about the rotation stuff that we talked about. They talked about, like, the frustration with the team looking terrible when Lonzo's out. And there's all of that stuff. Anthony, do you think that it's as simple as that? Or do you think that it's as simple as that? Or do you think that there are more reasons that the team is frustrating this year?
It's all about expectations. I thought heading into this year that they would be a better team than they were last year. I thought that they had a chance at amassing.
I did not.
I thought they had a chance at amassing more wins than they did last year. I thought that the starting five that made sense to me was going to be Lonzo, KCP, Ingram, Randall, and Brooke Lopez. And we haven't seen that very much this year. And then randomly when we started actually seeing it, it started actually making sense. Then Lonzo got hurt. And then, you know, Ingram has been dinged up here and there, and KCP's jail situation and all of this offseason stuff. It's just the season has fallen well short of expectations. And look, I mean, like you mentioned earlier, I tweeted out that I wish we would just do away with the Rookie of the Year award. And it's because expectations do way too much to paint our eventual analysis, right?
Yeah, and my frustration is along a similar line. Like, I did not expect this team to be good. I actually expected them to be worse than last year. But I think the season has still been frustrating just because of how freaking stupid the way this team is, like, covered and discussed, like, on a national level,
yeah.
Where it's just, like, everyone wants to argue about Lonzo when, to me, it seems so totally clear that there are things that he does well and there are things that he doesn't do well, and it's kind of as simple as that. And it's not that he's a bust, and it's not that he's the next transcendent player to lead the Lakers back to titles, and that there's a middle ground, and people just are so willfully ignorant of that it can just be in the middle, and that we can, maybe we don't know right now whether or not Lonzo is going to be the Lakers' next superstar or whether he's going to be a draft bust. We just don't. We're like halfway through his career. He hasn't even played every single game for the Lakers, and there's just no possible way to know. We can take our best guesses, but the certainty that people use when they're just like screaming at each other on Twitter over his career, or like writing hit pieces on him and the way that LaVar is surely going to tear him down and like affect this stuff, like, we just don't know. And like the way that people don't acknowledge that they don't know as they're like analyzing him, and that they're like, really all of this is just guesswork, and how stupid everyone would look if we went back and like analyzed like every writer's early predictions about rookies, because like nobody is right 100% of the time. I just think that it's been bizarre and it's been exhausting and it's just been stupid.
I don't have anything to add there. You hit it on the head. I don't get
mad a lot, but when I do, Anthony agrees with me.
I wish that there was a way to isolate the Lakers from, whether it's, so the huge fan base does a lot to turn off national writers, because the people who are the quickest to jump into their mentions tend to be Laker fans, because there are a lot of them, right? Like, nobody whines about Milwaukee Bucks fans because there's like three of them, right? I wish that there was a way to isolate the Lakers as a basketball institution, as a basketball team, from the entire brand, because to me, this is an interesting team. This is an interesting organization. This is an interesting dynamic moving forward. And yet we keep on getting hung up on LaVar Ball says the latest stupid thing. Magic Johnson, it doesn't say the latest stupid thing. Magic Johnson might be in Hawaii. Lonzo Ball's, the Lakers are terrible without Lonzo Ball. Therefore, he is a godsend. Like, no, none of those things are true. Let's just get back to
there's like so much contextual noise around all of this stuff, because the sample size is so small that to just like try and draw overarching conclusions is just dumb. And like, we should acknowledge that it's dumb if you're going to try and do it.
Yep. I think this season, look, there's plenty of time for it to be turned around, right? We aren't even at the All-Star break. we've reached that point of the season where it's like, God, how much longer is this thing? But I think there's plenty of time for this thing to turn around. I think as teams start tanking, the Lakers will start kind of falling into wins, because other teams aren't going to be trying to win. Yep. as the season draws closer to its end. And that'll probably help the perception around this team. Lonzo getting healthy, and frankly, all of the guys getting healthy over the course of the All-Star break will probably help and go a long way into getting things back on track. We're starting to get reports that as the deadline approaches, the Lakers might be kind of quiet. That'll probably help with the chemistry stuff that you and I talked about earlier. And so as all these things kind of come together, there's a chance that the second half of the season will be a lot better than the first. And if that's the case, then the stuff that you and I just talked about will be kind of null and void. But as of right now, it's kind of disappointing because I'm disappointed in the way that the team is covered, and because of the way that the team has played. It's been kind of a downer so far, but there's still a ton of ways how things can really improve.
Yeah, and so I think just to end here, we'll wrap. We got breaking news as we're recording this. The Lakers have signed Nigel Hayes to a 10-day contract. Anthony, is he the next superstar that Magic and Pelinka were talking about?
I mean, he sure. I'm just finding out who Nigel Hayes is.
Yeah, so he played at Wisconsin. He was famously the player who took a selfie in Kobe's locker during March Madness a year or two ago. And he was a 33% three-point shooter in college, so that's obviously like not going to cut it. So far in the G League, he has actually shot 45% from distance, and that is over almost 150 attempts. So that could be real improvement since it's coming during games, but we don't really know yet. And he's also averaging 14.9 points, 6.6 rebounds, 1.3 steals. Like this could be a guy. He could be a guy in the G League, or that's what he was doing in the G League. He could be an NBA player. I guess like we'll ultimately find out. But like there, you can kind of see some promising signs.
So what you're saying is he's going to be the guy who Laker fans have zero expectations for, and because he outdoes zero expectations, people are going to fall in love with him,
and then crap on him when he doesn't. It further exceed their now unrealistic expectations.
Yeah, yeah.
As is tradition.
The cycle continues.
Yep.
All right, so that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. We jumped into the mailbag. We dove in head first. We gave you guys plenty of hashtag content to send you out over this next weekend. I am hopefully back 100% moving forward. I can't imagine my voice will get much worse than it was this week.
He said, jinxing it.
Yeah. As he finds out, he has an actual frog lodged in his throat. But I will be back. We will be back next week. You guys be safe over the weekend. For those of you who are coming over to the house, please treat my house well. Please don't insult my carne asada. Oh, yeah, Harrison, you can't do that because you don't eat meat. So
we're definitely looking... not meat cooked by people that have pneumonia. That's for sure.
I don't have pneumonia. I just don't know if I don't have it.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Have a good one, everybody.